Learn more about the albums you love with Dissect, a music analysis podcast hosted by me, Cole Kushner, a lifelong musician and composer. Each season of Dissect dives deep into a single album, forensically dissecting the music, lyrics, and meaning of one song per episode. Our newest season is covering Tyler, the Creator's Igor, a beautifully honest album in which Tyler explores love, communication, masculinity, and truth. Listen to Dissect today only on Spotify, because great art deserves more than a swipe.
This episode is brought to you by eBay Motors. With over 122 million parts, from superchargers and brakes to exhaust kits and beyond, eBay Motors levels your baby up to its peak performance. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Oh, hold up. Smell test. Go ahead. Sniff those pits. Now, your bits. Feet. Toes, come on. Ugh. Could be fresher, right? It's all good. Old Spice Total Body Deodorant Spray is gentle enough to use all over your body, giving you 24/7 lasting freshness with daily use, from pits to toes and down below. So every smell test gets a... Shop for Old Spice Total Body Deodorant.
Cold open question of the week, Kaz.
What's up, Dave? It's a short week.
It's a short week. It's a Thanksgiving week. Happy Thanksgiving. And in the spirit of Thanksgiving, this is what I want to ask you.
What's
you're
up?
In a fight. You're in a fight and you turn around and your opponent is holding one of the brandishing one of these things. Which is the one you least want to see? A big diamond ring, a set of brass knuckles, a hammer, or a pair of pliers?
Ooh, golly. Okay. Here's the thing about all three of those weapons, right? All brandished the right way, they could be similar, right? Mm-hmm. But there's something a little sick about pliers, right? There's
yes.
something a little twisted about, like, the way they're used and, like, the only, you know? Like, yeah, I think I'm going to go pliers. If you got a diamond ring, like, I might, like, rob you for it. And brass knucks probably go for, what, $20, maybe, if that? But not going with the hammer. Hammer's vicious, but pliers... Pliers is the final answer, Shoes.
The brass knucks, you're right. Not necessarily the scariest thing, but their metaphorical intensity is sometimes greater than anything else. Let's start the show.
What's going on, jabronis? It's Pitch Mr. Perfect, Skylar Astin.
Hey, this is Bruce Pritchard.
This is Roast Battle Season 1 champion Mike Lawrence.
Husky Steve Kazee.
This is Trey Kirby.
This is your girl, WWE superstar, the legit boss, Sasha Banks.
Hi, this is Lillian Garcia.
My name's Kevin Owens.
I'm Shinsuke Nakamura.
I'm AJ Styles, the phenomenal one, if you will, and you're listening to the...
And you're listening
you're
to...
You're listening to...
And you are listening to...
And you're listening, listening to...
You are listening to The Masked Man Show.
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 Welcome to The Masked Man Show Monday with Kaz and with two very special guests, Nick Bond and Phil Schneider.
Hi.
How you
Hello.
Guys doing?
Gang.
How's everybody doing?
Oh, wow.
Wonderful.
It's a wonderful
The Lord has
Monday.
Truly blessed this day.
This is your official AEW Full Gear 2022 reaction podcast. We're doing it on Monday morning. We've had some time that we all watched it. We've had some time for it to all sink in. I feel like a bad fan because I didn't go. And honestly, I had family obligations. I mean, I have family obligations, full disclosure, during Survivor Series too. So I'm going to be, you know, watching it on the,
don't tell
like,
Reddit.
Yeah, I'm going to be watching it on the side and late into the rewatch late. But I just, there was some point when I was like halfway through the pay-per-view where I was like, man, I would be dozing in my chair if I'm just too old. I'm too old to go sit in a seat for 5 hours, man. It's just not, WrestleMania is a haul. It's all a haul, man. Anyway,
I love AEW pay-per-views just for the fact that they are amazingly like marathon level shows, right?
Yeah,
like,
I appreciate it. Don't get me wrong. We're not going to complain about the link beyond what I just did because they are what they are. And I think they're kind of awesome for it.
You guys are soft. I went to a Colorado Lucha show 2 weeks ago that was like 3.5 hours with two small children because I was solo parenting. And it was like local luchadors. having long promo exchanges in Spanish while my son was watching the phone. I was trying to get my daughter to sleep with headphones. You're like, oh, I don't want to go to this well-produced pay-per-view full of good matches.
Now, Brian's in the chat. Producer Brian Waters in the chat calling Phil Dad of the Year. He said that before the headphones thing. Now, listen, there are some of these goody-two-shoes parents, they'll take exception to the use of headphones or other devices, but that it's so key, man. Like, I'll straight up take my 3-year-old to the movies. Like, we'll just go to see what, I mean, obviously there's limits to it, but like, you know, we'll go see a movie that me and the teen and my wife.
You're not
going to
see Top Gun with the kids.
He's all Barbarian. Just get the headphones on, look at the phone.
You put headphones, iPad, turn them slightly a different direction. He's asleep in like 20 minutes anyway. It's fantastic.
I can't wait.
Well, you're right. I am weak. And according to Brian, our producer, the long shows are way better in person. That's true. That's true. But anyway, we had a really, it was a very, very good show. I'm excited to talk to you guys about it because AEW, if you haven't noticed from Twitter, such as it is, and the various other online forums, AEW brings out a lot of commentary, and it's a lot of philosophical commentary, right? It's not just like that was a great match that you needed, fine. But there's a lot of just kind of deep thinking and just sort of like 2 degrees away complaints and cheers. I don't know. I don't know. Nick, what was your top line review of Full Gear?
I fell asleep during the main event. That would be my top line review. Like,
I said we weren't going to do this.
So I said before the show, I have a hot take about MJF, which is I think he kind of sucks now. I did not enjoy that. I thought the post. So I grew up on Long Island. So kids like MJF are a dime a dozen. Like he is a Long Island theater nerd who's cosplaying as like a rich kid drug dealer. Like that he's trying to be hard. And it's like, who are you trying to impress, dude?
Like he sells ecstasy pills in the bathroom.
Exactly. Like that's exactly what he reminds me of. Like
but also that's kind of what he's doing, right? I mean I don't
sure, is but there are people who are devil worshippers.
I mean
No, I think he's trying to be like Rowdy Roddy Piper, and he's barely like he's just not in the same league, I don't think. I like MJF. I think he's incredibly talented. I think he has potential to be the best wrestler of his generation. This ain't it. Like, this character sucks. He cannot fake the funk. The firm is terrible. It's like, I do not get why you're doing this with him when there's way more interesting characterizations you can have. All of the promos he has are in opposition to this character about how he's like really a sensitive guy with like a lot to give to the world. And I can't with this character. I fell asleep because I knew it was going to happen. Somebody was going to turn against somebody and that was going to be the whole show.
Nick, this is Wrestling Reddit's most hated podcast, right? This is
I was going to be canceled on the internet. It's fine. It's who I am. I've been listening on national television. I'm built different.
Hey, man, welcome to the club, bro. I'll fill you on that. I think I didn't have that take, but hearing you like explain it that way, I can see why you would think that. But I just believe, just to kind of follow up on your sort of like takeaways from the entire pay-per-view, I get where you're coming from, but I did look at Full Gear as like a hard reset for AEW in general, right? Like we've talked about All Out to death. Right. We've talked about Punk and everything to death. Right.
Did something happen on that show?
I haven't looked at my Twitter in 6 months. It's been weird. Right. So, you know, putting the title on MGF and it being so predictable doesn't necessarily make it a bad thing. Right.
Oh, like, no. I think those are two separate ideas. I'm fine with him being champion. I think he's talented enough. I just hate this character.
Okay. All right. But all right. I hear you on that. And I think, you know, there's probably merit to what you think about the character at the moment. But I do think right now is probably our best sort of clean slate to kind of see what MJF is going forward, right? Like, he's in a very different position now. He's not the challenger. He's not the chaser. He's not the diamond ring, whatever you call it, winner anymore, right? Like, you are the face of the company. You are the number one guy undisputed in AEW, right? And on top of that, he's in a position now that's rare for a lot of professional wrestlers and definitely people at his age, is that now he's getting Hollywood looks. And this is a specific time for him to be a specific type of character. And the reason why he got that character, I'm assuming, is because of how much of a by the book, not by the book, but how much of a very almost old school type of heel that he is, even though he's like sort of like this prodigy, right? Like it's sort of like both things at the same time. That's what makes him so unique. That's what makes him so interesting as a character. I'll say this.
He's an old soul.
Yeah, right. Bingo. He's a young man with an old soul, right? And I think that is kind of what made Full Gear so palatable for me. My whole thing was, don't fuck it up. Right? Like, I think for the past several pay-per-views, like, AEW raised the bar so much by just having banger after banger every couple of months that when All Out happened, or even like the pay-per-view before All Out that I thought was a little too long and I kind of fell asleep towards also, people were like, okay, the honeymoon's over now, right? Like, not everything they do is fucking smells like roses and candy, whatever. That being said, they were dealt a pretty shitty hand. And I think at this point, they're doing their best to completely course correct, right? Yeah, down from Jamie Hayter to MJF to the Acclaimed. Like, everything is even Saraya's debut. Like, this whole pay-per-view was like, okay, the year is over. It's like it's like how most people in the industry think right now, right? You're already putting up your out of office holiday messages. You're already getting ready for 2023. This pay-per-view should only be served as, what is 2023 going to look like? And
I think they did a good job. I agree. And I'm going to get Phil in here real quick, but I just want to say that I agree. I know where you're coming from, Nick, but you know, you talk to a lot of wrestlers and there's the old truism that Steve Austin is famous for saying that the best characters are just themselves, the volume turned way up, right? But a lot of times when you play heel, you're not just playing yourself with the volume turned up, you're playing the guy that you grew up hating, right? Mm-hmm. You're playing the most detestable person that you know personally from your childhood, from your life, whatever. And so I think it makes sense that he's a theater nerd cosplaying as this dude whatever. I mean, it's like that, and it works. I think you're right. The ending of the match was preordained. The specific ending of the match we predicted on the Masked Man show, a lot of people did, but they executed it well. And I think more than anything else, I'm excited to see what's next. And I think for a character like MJF, it's surprising to me how excited I am to see what's next. Because there's a lot of, because he is a certain sort of heel that you feel like you've seen before. But I also don't know how this run's going to look. And I'm excited to see what the reboot that Kaz is talking about looks like, because there's a million guys he can go up against. That's, you know, we've talked about that before. But it's not just that. It's also how you present this guy week in and week out. Can you make him look like, frankly, can you make him look as big as Chris Jericho did when they launched the company? Because this is the relaunch and he's doing it. But
yeah. So I also don't think we have any idea what his character is now. I mean, that was a heel turn, and you know, he was functionally a babyface coming into that match. That's a heel turn. I mean, I am completely going to, what I wrote about this, which should be out by the time you guys listen to this, I basically said that I'm completely withholding judgment of what I think of the end of that match until I see what they do with it. Because I have no idea what they're at, how they actually, like, I've got some real questions about what they need to do. I don't think that was evil enough to turn the crowd on him.
Yeah, that's the other thing, is they're going to have to go so deep into the muck. But continues. Yeah.
And I also think he was doing something a little different coming into this match. And this feels a little bit like they're going back to the same thing that he's been since the company started. And it was like, well, I thought, you know, coming into it was like, I mean, I kind of guessed that this was going to be the finish too, like kind of everyone did. But I was thinking, you know, you could run him for a little bit with as a baby face. There's a fair amount of, you know, rope left with that. And it's kind of seems strange that they kind of just switched this back to him doing somewhat of the same thing he's been doing since the beginning.
I gotta see whether they are going to switch it up or not. I got to disagree, man. I feel like, you know, MJF, he's in a position that, you know, as far as everyone on the roster is concerned, he's the best talker, right? Anybody who's listened to this podcast for the past however long you've listened to it, my main thing with AEW has always been, man, the matches are going to be bangers regardless. Who can tell a story? Who can carry a storyline? And from the handful of people in AEW, MJF by far has been the person who's been the best at like telling stories and getting people emotionally involved. Before he even takes off the damn suit and the robe and you realize, holy shit, the dude's jacked. He's been talking to you for about like 4 or 5 weeks about why you should even care about what he's personally going through. He's only been in the title scene for what, a couple months now? He's made people care about the diamond ring. He's made people care about Punk. He made people care about the Wardlow shit. Like, he just makes people care. So that's why, like, you know, right now, I'm not going to really poo-poo on the heel turn that we all kind of saw coming, because I feel like he's earned enough rope as a creative storyteller to be like, I'm going to take you on this journey as champion now. We'll see how it goes. And for the longest time, for most of his career, he said on every single promo leading up to the show, every great thing that he's done has been overshadowed by other shit, whether it be new people coming in, whether it be bullshit behind the scenes, whether it be all this type of stuff. Now that's done. He's the unquestioned star of the show. And now it is on him to see if all the great storytelling that he's done throughout these several months and years leading up to this moment is going to pay off in him being what he's always said he is, a generational talent.
I agree with what you're saying. I think withholding judgment's the right move. But in terms of, we talked enough about what we think about MJF. What happened between the bells? Phil, this is on your best matches of the week column. Tell us why this match was the best match AEW put on this week.
All right. It's a shame that Nick fell asleep during it, because I think the actual work in it was really, really good. I thought it was a really tremendous Moxley performance for a guy who's probably going to go on a well-deserved vacation for a couple months after this. Like,
how we've all turned John Moxley into like the Lethal Weapon of wrestling.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
He's one day away from vacation.
My boat says live forever. I think this was kind of the apex of what he'd been doing, right? Working this sort of hard, physical, violent style and really kind of being John Moxley in a match where he was, booed by the whole crowd. And he said, okay, this is what I do. I'm going to come in and beat this guy up. I don't care if you boo me while I do it. And I thought he was great. I thought, MJF working as a sort of a traditional American babyface, which is not a way that he's ever worked before, right? Getting the crowd into it as he turned the figure four, right? Like selling that knee off the tombstone pile driver on the ring apron, right? Like at one point he hits Moxley's head into the turnbuckles 10 times, like he's Tito Santana at Madison Square Garden in 1986. I mean, that was a blast of a match. And it felt like I'm probably lower on MJF overall than a lot of the people are, but I think, you put him in a long match on a pay-per-view, he pretty much delivers every time in a way that he's a guy I was watching on the indies before he got signed to AEW. And every time he showed up, I was like, oh, this guy doing his horseshit. Like, it was not a guy I was particularly high on when they signed him. But I think he's sort of, he is sort of developed on the microphone. He's developed in the ring. And I think he kind of deserves his spot. And I thought this was a really, really good performance from him in a way that he hasn't normally worked like this, which is one of the reasons I was a little like, oh, okay, he's going to go back to working the same way he always did. I kind of was looking forward to seeing him be Ricky Steamboat for a couple of, for a little while. Right.
But that's my thing. I think he knows that you know that you're thinking that, right? Like you, like Phil, you are like a wrestling historian. Like only like you and like a good section of the audience knows that he's literally doing like the most classic babyface tributes of the 80s, 90s, and today, right? Like he's the Z100 of wrestling, right? So like, he's going there, like doing the 10 counts and doing the come on, let's just to build up to that eventual brass knuckles handing over to him, right? He knows that you know that. And he never deviated, even though you've said he's a babyface and people have said he's been working babyface. I don't think he's ever openly straight up said, like, he's always still referred to himself as the devil.
Yeah,
referred to himself as like, I'm still a piece of shit.
Yeah, if you thought he was a babyface, I mean, it's in the nicest, most loving way. You are a mark if you thought he was a babyface. And to be clear, I thought the main event, what I watched was able to stay after. It was fine. I think Moxley's fantastic. I agree with all of that. The thing that really bothered me was the post-game press conference. I thought that was the worst thing he's done in ages. It was awful. And it's like, you are going to be what, David, you would know better than I would. Is the guy he's playing important to the Von Erich family in a meaningful way? Like, is it a big part? Like,
No, Lance. So in other words, Lance Von Erich is a fake Von Erich. It's when the Von Erich started dying off, they brought in a random jobber and pretended he was their cousin.
Yeah, and so like it's not a starring role.
The most interesting part of the whole story is that's actually, in my humble opinion, what killed the territory. Because all the fans were like, we will go along and pretend that your kids aren't all fuck ups. We will overlook the fact that there's like drug overdoses and like, you know, whatever else, and all this other stuff's going on.
I heard it was stomach troubles, but okay.
Yes, but that was different. But we will overlook the chaos for the purposes of like playing along with the show. But as soon as you really insult our intelligence to this degree, to pretend that this random ass dude is a long lost Von Erich, then we're out.
And I think that's kind of like, he's not going to be a big movie star. He's going to do Santa with Muscles. Like, role relatively
this
speaking.
This is a real movie, right?
It's a real movie.
So is Santa with Muscles, all right? Disrespectful.
Isn't the Marine Six, right? He'll have a opportunity to be in like a real movie that'll get Oscar consideration and things like that, depending on how they pull it off. But it's not a big role. I don't know, right? Maybe the movie is about that time in world
that
class
so
when
great.
They brought
that
in.
Would be
maybe
so
it's
great
the
if it
Lance
was just
show.
All about Lance. This episode is brought to you by eBay Motors. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED highlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. We got to move on to some other matches. Here we go. Here's how we're going to finish this thing. I'm going to ask you, you get to each say one name. At any, whatever point it is in the future, who's going to take the belt off MJF? Ooh. Phil, you go first.
Eddie Kingston.
Mm.
Nick?
I don't think they have a baby face that's as over as him.
So this is me completely biased. Adam Page, he's my favorite wrestler in the company.
Kaz?
Oh, man. I'm going to go... Golly, that's such a tough question. I have two... Can I give two answers?
Sure.
Okay. My first answer was immediately Hangman Adam Page, which is why I'm changing it now. and secondly... CM Punk.
That was going to be my hammer.
There's a small part of me that wants to see it. Like, there's a small part of me that...
The match or the actual giving of the title? Because I've watched CM Punk's matches.
His matches
with MJF were tremendous.
If he comes back, yeah. I mean, I think that's it's not bad odds. Yeah. It's either that.
No, I'm actually bullshitting.
I would say Chris Jericho, except for the fact that I don't see how they could possibly have the crowd not even respectfully throw garbage in the ring. I'll say Kenny Omega just because, you know, no one else has said him. Moving on. We had a great trios title match between the Death Triangle and the returning Elite, who had a hell of an entrance. They announced after the match this is going to be the beginning of a best of seven series for the titles, which is a lot of matches. But I can't say anything because I've been on the record saying every time, I mean, the whole first year and a half of the company, I was saying every time they had more national exposure because they got a good lead in, because it was a big night, because people are paying it to air. I said, every time people are watching, Go put the Bucks and the Lucha Bros in the ring together. Just let them go, because that's a thing that people are going to see, and they're going to be like, this is something I haven't seen before, if you haven't seen it before, right?
Yeah.
And I also was talking to our editor, Cal, and Jonathan Snowden this morning, our wonderful writer who interviewed Roman Reigns for a piece today about how he's the
great piece.
It's a
check that out.
Incredible piece. Yeah. But I was talking to them earlier, and I was like, you know, it's kind of like a house show circuit when you don't have the liberty of just running house shows when no one else knows, you know, when town to town, they don't know what happened at the last town. If you want to sell tickets in seven cities across America, you got to announce your bet. If you have one ace in the whole match, you got to announce it for every show, you know, just like that's what's going to get people to buy tickets to see one of these matches. But it was a good show last night. How would you guys rank this trios match?
I would say it's one of their better matches, obviously. I missed just watching like Kenny Omega at the apex of his powers. And I think this was as close as we've gotten to see him like that in a long time.
He looked great. Like physically.
Like he looked jacked again. He looked like he was fresh out of Japan. The time off.
Yeah. There's a real joy de vivre when he wrestles, and it was there in a way that it hadn't been the past couple of times.
Totally true.
Yeah, he was definitely the person I watched the most just because, you know, even when they did win the Trios title, the story was him getting back into form, right? And that last match was him, like, pretty much saying, like, I'm back. And then he was gone for another several months, right? So
he had all the tape around his drip. Like, the first return was, like, when Macho Man was wearing, like, the shirt and the long pants.
Yeah, like, it was like a progressive,
WCW,
like...
WCW Macho was suddenly here, you know? It was just, like, twice as big as he was before. He looked great.
He looked fantastic. I'm a big fan of, like, scoring in wrestling. Like a best of three, a best of seven, all that Iron Man matches, anything that can make the sport feel more like a sport, I'm always up for, right? So being able to know that like these guys are going to have a match every week, I guess, or every other week for the next 4 to 7 days. Now, is it like game match five or match six if necessary? Or like, can you get like swept? Like, are they going to...
Let me spoil something for you.
Like, wouldn't it be hilarious? Wouldn't it be funny though? Like, if they just got like Houston Astros.
It would be hilarious is if the Death Triangle won dominantly in the first four matches in a row, and then Tony Khan came out and he was like, "I actually did have to fire the Elite after the brawl, and this is how we agreed they were going to go."
If they go down 3-0, they need to all like sit in a gym with glasses on, and it says no team has ever come back from 3-0 like LeBron James with the Undertaker shirt on.
No, I want them to go around the backstage and go, don't let us win this one. Let us win this one. As a Red Sox fan, that's what I want.
I wouldn't be shocked if this was if Tony Khan decided he was going to flip the one wrestling trope on the head and actually have it go six games. I mean, that would be impossible, right? I mean, there isn't the seventh one in LA, right? I mean, they're going to do the seventh. I mean,
wasn't Bucks and Six a thing? Like Bucks and Six was the thing for Milwaukee, right? Like they could kind of just, you know, use that. I don't know, but the actual match, obviously, like I'm like you said. Rey Fénix is like one of my favorite wrestlers on the planet. It's hard for me to like watch him and not be blown away every time he gets in a match. Obviously Kenny Omega looked great. It was great. The Bucks entrance was phenomenal. Just to show that there's definitely two Americas. I'm sitting here thinking like, oh, this is the song from South Park. everybody else is like, what?
My dad used to play that.
but it was an excellent match, man. And, you know, it's a smart thing to do because it immediately puts some importance on those trios titles that were kind of sitting on ice for a little bit when the whole Elite Punk thing happened. So by hook or by crook, by the end of these seven matches, these trios titles are going to feel important and feel like a big deal. So I'm looking forward to it. And it gives us time to see other trios sort of like come together because I want to see other people challenge for these titles outside of like the three-man groups that are on the roster at the moment. So I really enjoyed the match, man. And I always enjoy their matches. So it was a surprise that it banged when they locked up this weekend.
I'm hesitant. I don't know if I think it's going to be very, very difficult for these six guys to do seven things that aren't going to feel like they're running through the same thing every time. Maybe they're obviously very creative. I think there has tended to be a bit of a sameness every time these guys match up already. So one every single week, each time. These guys aren't as talented wrestlers as Lex Luger and Nikita. So I think it's going to be hard for them to sort of bring that level, the Lex Luger and Nikita level to this. But you know, I think there are certainly some things you could have one be a really, really, you know, big brawl. I think you can maybe have one be kind of a blowout, right? Maybe if you're going to do seven, you have one where it goes like 6 minutes and it's almost entirely one-sided. I mean, you could do some interesting things with it. But if these guys just run this match seven times in a row, I don't think that's going to work.
Yeah, I feel like you got to, you know, I think there's opportunity there to tell a story, because I think they've been telling the whole, you know, Pac and Phoenix story of taking a shortcut and, you know, should I cheat? Should I not cheat? Do I need to do this? Should I not do this? Like, if you're going to wrestle somebody seven times, like, it will almost behoove you to not go and fuck them up at least once or twice before a match. Like, at least, switch it up a little bit.
I really like the pay-per-view, but did we need three matches where the angle was, is somebody going to cheat with a foreign object?
No.
I mean, there was, you have 10 matches and three of them run the exact same, same storyline.
We've talked about that on our post-game shows. This is a continuing problem for AEW. The agents don't talk to each other. Like, it makes no sense. This has happened over and over again where it's like, why did they do the same exact finish in three separate matches? Or why did they do this exact big time spot as the big spot in two matches, right one after the other? Like, they need to get their house in order when it comes to that stuff real bad, which is why I would be nervous about them being able to do seven matches in a row.
In WWE, they, at least under the old regime, if there was a whiff of a repeated spot, then all hell would break loose, right? I mean, they would never allow. Actually, am I allowed to tell? Has Rosenberg told his story about this on the air? Brian,
I don't know. I don't know.
You might have to edit this out. When Rosenberg won the 24/7 championship, he did it with a crotch shot and a roll up. And it was a weird crotch shot, and it was whatever. It was obviously they just kind of brought it, came together pretty quickly. And after that happened, there was a big to-do because the main event featuring Roman Reigns was also supposed to involve a crotch shot. They were so worried that Rosenberg's gimmick would overshadow Roman Reigns.
I mean, Rosenberg's pretty over, dude.
In AEW, that's just a huge thing. Now, I'm not saying that's more right, but I think you kind of get the impression that Tony Khan or whoever's making these incidental decisions are like, even if it's a problem, my number one objective is you got to let players play. This is the thing they've come up with. This is the thing they've built to. They want to do it. Let's just let them go out there and do it. And we'll take the flack for it seeming vaguely repetitive. It's not ideal, but it might be better than the alternative. Who knows?
You know, I don't remember how that main event ended, but I definitely do remember Rosenberg getting that low blow on R-Truth. So maybe they had a point.
He only had one match. If Roman had only wrestled once, he'd probably remember that one too.
I'd probably remember it.
It's funny because every primetime wrestling match between two name guys in the 80s ended with the manager jumping on the ring apron and then the face pushing that guy into that manager and then rolling him up. Every time they would have it's Butch Reed versus Tito Santana. Okay, well, Slick's going to jump up on the apron and then they're going to push Butch Reed into him. Tito Santana's going to roll up. So at some point, this was not a priority of the WWF. Obviously, it's kind of cool that it's a priority of them now, but I remember that as a kid, even as 10 years old, I know this match is going to end.
We got
to wait around for Jimmy Hart to jump on the apron with the megaphone.
With the megaphone, Jimmy Hart spent more time on the apron than he did on the floor, waving his arms around. We got to keep trucking through this. The Acclaimed retain their titles against Swerve and Our Glory. I think this was probably the popular prediction. I fantasy booked Swerve and Our Glory winning and still having a fallout, you know. But this seems like the right look. I think we're headed in the right direction. Very good match. But I think I want to lump a couple of these together. The Acclaimed retained. Jamie Hayter is your new interim women's champion. I love the fact that Toni Storm's reign doesn't exist at this point because she was only ever an interim champion. Darby Allin and his cool dad Sting won their match. And Jungle Boy Jack Perry came off the top rope. Came from the top of the cage and lightly put Luchasaurus through a table to win. Pretty good cage match. Ricky Starks also defeated Brian Cage in the pre-show to move into the finals of the World Championship Eliminator Tournament. I lump all of these together because these are all to some vague definition, AEW originals or AEW projects, AEW folks. Where between this long group, Jamie Hayter, the Acclaimed, Darby Allin, Jungle Jack Perry, and Ricky Starks, that's your five. One of them's a tag team. How do you rank those people? And well, it's going to be a lot if we all do it together. Who's number one for you in that five? Phil.
Acclaimed.
Nick?
Jungle Jack Perry.
Oh, that's a good one. Kaz?
I would say the Acclaimed right now, but I can see that they're building Ricky Starks for a main event run. So I'm going to go 1A, the Acclaimed, 1B, Ricky Starks.
I was putting this note together, and you know who I spent the longest on? One, I think the answer is Jamie Hayter, because the amount of runway that she's going to have is going to be absolutely ridiculous. Now, for all I know, she, you know, is incapable of talking. I know that's not literally true, but her star power is so outstrips what we actually have seen of her that like anything is possible. But I think she has everything and she's going to be a super duper star. But the one that I spent the most time on was Darby Allin, because I don't know if Darby Allin is going to keep being Sting's tag team partner for the next 5 years, or if he's going to be the guy that beats MJF in 6 months. Like, I don't know what, it's not even, I don't know what Darby Allin is capable of. I don't know what like Tony Khan thinks Darby Allin is capable of. I do think that him having such a long run with Sting might have sort of formally insinuated him as the sort of Undertaker-y guy in AEW, in the sense that he doesn't need to be in the title picture. He can kind of just have like a big match at every pay-per-view, and that's cool. I don't know. What do you think Darby Allin's ceiling is, Nick?
Speaking out about Darby Allin is weird for me. He's like the poor man's Jeff. I love a lot of AEW. You keep picking the guys that I don't like. I do not like Darby Allin at all. I have never liked him. He's like just the worst parts of Jeff Hardy, as far as I'm concerned. And I also think I think there are things outside of wrestling that may affect his ability to be pushed all the way to the top.
Yeah, that's probably true. That's probably true. Phil, what do you think about Darby?
I leaving aside that, I love Darby Allin. I think he's one of my four or five favorite wrestlers in AEW. I mean, I rank the Acclaimed above him because I think the Acclaimed are more, at this point, a more complete pushed act, right? Like I think they've really figured out the Acclaimed in a way, and they've delivered in the ring and in the, you know, super over. And Darby has been kind of Sting hold for the last, I don't know, year or something like that. But I mean, you know,
Sting hold.
He's kind of a Sting hold. He's in the Sting hall. But I mean, he's an incredible wrestler and really can do pretty much anything. And I'm you know, a Jeff Hardy guy. I go back to Will. I used to drive to Armories in North Carolina, watch Will of the Wisp matches before Jeff Hardy was even on TV. That's my guy. But Darby Allin's better than Jeff Hardy ever was.
Darby Allin can do just about anything except like fill out a size of 32 waist pants. So, wait,
did you say Darby Allin is better than Jeff Hardy ever was? Or did
yes,
I ask the wrong way?
100%.
I gotta Jeff disagree there, buddy.
Yeah, I watched the Armageddon where he won the championship. It was better than anything Darby Allin's ever been. Like,
Jeff Hardy has had at least four like Michael Jordan moments in professional wrestling, or like I don't even need to watch basketball. I know who jumped from the free throw line. I know who did the fist pump. I know who did all that stuff. Same thing with Jeff Hardy. Some people don't even know wrestling. They know he's the crazy motherfucker who jumps off of shit. Like, he is in that.
And he's very much invited to the kickout, from what I understand.
Yes, he is. Knows his jagged edge very well, man. He's all right with me.
I mean, he did it first, right? You know, I mean, which is part of the reason that I think I'm talking about very specifically like in ring stuff, right?
For sure.
Jeff Hardy did it first, and he remembers certainly.
I think it's the general aura that I'm talking about. I don't, whether or not work rate or whatever, it's just like Jeff Hardy makes you jump out of your seat because he's going to do something spectacular. Darby Allin's kind of like, is he going to fall and hit something? I don't
know. Yeah, like, I don't know if I could, I understand where you're coming from as far as like
100%, yeah.
The style.
He's a way better worker.
I think we know Jeff Hardy can do what Darby Allin does. I'm not sure Darby Allin could do what Jeff Hardy does, has that, done. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know if he could. We're talking about who would be the guys you would want to see dethrone MJF. And in most situations, we would think a guy like Darby Allin would be like right in that conversation. And none of us brought him up. Like, I don't think he could. Like,
well, it's a booking thing, right? I mean, he's really has been a tag partner.
He was TNT champion, and I completely forgot he was TNT champion.
When he was TNT champion, he could have plausibly won the world title then. I think he was it's a push issue, not a talent issue.
The problem is if you put him in the ring with somebody like Miro, he looks like a baby person, and not in a way that like he can fight from underneath. He looks like he's half his size.
Disagree with that. I think he's as good at working underneath as a David in a David Goliath match as anybody outside of maybe Rey Mysterio is the best of it at all.
He is very, very good at it.
Darby is incredible. You go watch his matches against, I'm going to have to send you guys some links. Go watch his matches against Walter and Evolve or Chris Hero and Evolve, or the match he had against, Brody King.
A couple
6 months ago. I mean, he is very, very good at taking these horrific beatings from giant guys, but finding plausible ways to get in good looking offense.
He's not trying to book himself as a big guy. He knows how to do it.
He's not Adam Cole throwing suplexes.
There you go.
He knows how to work his be the fact that he's a little guy, but okay, I'm fast enough to throw this incredible looking tope, or I'm going to do this really, really great crisp roll up, or I'm going to catch some guy out of, not realizing where he is with a coffin drop, as opposed to I'm as strong as this guy, even though I'm 5'6" and weigh 145 pounds.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
We talked about all the AEW dudes, not all of them. We mentioned a lot of those names. Let's take a second and talk about some people who might be more conventionally thought of as WWE dudes and dudettes. Saraya had her debut match for AEW, her first match in how many years, Brian?
5 years.
5 years. That was Kaz, by the way, who said that. Samoa Joe claimed the TNT title. He's now a double belt holder.
And also a Samoan named Joe with two belts.
kind of a shock. Chris Jericho retained the Ring of Honor World Championship over Bryan Danielson, Claudio, and Sammy. What do we think about these matches? Let me just throw it open. Samoa Joe was a shocker. Saraya, not so much a shocker. Although I would say there's some kind of surprise in the general quality of the match and the fact that she was, I mean, I didn't believe it until I saw it. Not that I didn't think the match was going to happen, but like it was kind of hard to wrap my head around. The Jericho thing continues to be a low level surprise, even though I know exactly what they're doing and we talk about it every week. Who of those do you think had the best performance? Phil?
Probably Jericho, which it kind of surprises me as like, I don't think I've ever really been a giant Jericho fan going back to, when he started wrestling. I always thought he was like, he was like a little step below his sort of peers. And I think at like, he's 50, whatever years old now, I think he really is having some of his best wrestling matches of his career, mm-hmm. which is kind of crazy considering how old he is. And, you know, but he's in very good shape. And I thought that match was really, really good. And I was probably, but that may be more of along the lines of I was less impressed. Well, I mean, Samoa Joe, that was fun, but I think it was kind of like, it felt like very much like the annual AEW pay-per-view match, which should have been on Dynamite. You know, like he's got like two or three of those, the inaugural. It's like, oh, this is why this show is 4 hours long. I mean, I like that match. That was fun. I'm a Samoa Joe guy from, you know, I love Samoa Joe. But is he a WWE guy in your mind?
ROH.
No, I'm trying to arrange this show, man. I'm just trying to get talking points.
I guess
he's most recently a WWE guy.
And it's like my wife thinks Alan Rickman's from Harry Potter, and I think he's from Die Hard. I'm wondering if it's a similar thing. Like when you think of Samoa Joe, is he a WWE guy in your mind, or is it?
He should have been. He should have been champ, man. Of all these dudes who went somewhere else, he
dropped the ball with him the most by far. He looked Brock in the face and made Brock flustered by telling him if he doesn't watch his mouth, he's going to beat the shit out of him. Like, Samoan Joseph was for real, for real, for real. Yeah. Bad, bad, bad man. God, I love Samoa Joe.
Yeah,
felt like the first real Samoa Joe moment.
Such a Samoa Joe fan, man. Like, it's hard for me to not pick him just because I feel like, okay, now that he has two titles, one title that doesn't have a TV show and one title that absolutely does have a TV show, we're going to see more Samoa Joseph talking more. You know what I mean? And I feel like that's been his best position, right? Like, I don't know if he was like I think he was doing like the Ninja Turtles movie or something like that, but he was gone for a minute. So like the fact that he has two titles now lets me know like, okay, they're going to start using him a lot more as a much more of a special attraction, big deal, all that type of stuff. I'd say in a sentimental sense, Saraya probably impressed me the most just off the fact of not wrestling for 5 years. And again, when I shit on people, I own it. And when I got to give people props, I'll own that too. Lots of props for Britt Baker for carrying a lot of that match a lot too. Yep. Like the first thing she said in that press conference, Sarai, was how much Britt Baker helped her through that match. And it is no easy feat working with somebody who has an injury history and who has been out the game for 5 years. And it's an important women's title match that wasn't for a women's title in AEW, which is pretty rare. They don't do that a lot, you know? And that kind of, that's been one of the things that's been sort of inconsistent with that company. It's how they book the women and how they booked a lot of their middle card and what's a real middle card over there, right? But we'll talk about that later. As far as the women are concerned, it was good to see a women's match with consequence that told a story that didn't have anything to do with a title belt. AEW hasn't done a great job telling a lot of women's stories. And I think Britt Baker is being used exactly how she should be used as a big deal, as sort of a kid, almost like the female Cody Rhodes at this point, right? Like she's popular enough to be the champion, but like you mm-hmm. being in a match with her kind of does more for you, especially if you're just sort of like getting your wings underneath you. So I'm gonna give it to Saraya and Britt Baker, honorable mention, as the people who've impressed me the most for that match. Obviously, it wasn't one of those matches that are, you know, lights out, just completely 5-star, whatever. But you know, it's not an easy thing. Sometimes them things don't need to be rated on stars and thumbs up and stuff like that. Sometimes you just got to give something the old eyeball test and be like, good to see that person doing what she does again. You know what I mean?
Overall,
and what it means for the future.
You say who impressed you the most. There's too much to even talk about. But of everybody on this card, who are you most excited to see on Dynamite? And you can't say Jeff Jarrett because we're all going to say him. Producer Brian, you go first. Who are you most excited to see on Dynamite this week? What's got your blood pumping the most?
Oh, it's MJF. I'm ready for the MJF era.
All right. Nick, what do you think?
Samoa Joe. And he's one of the best promos in the business. So like, I'm just excited to hear him talk, explain what he plans to do in the future. I think he'll be really good for elevating the TNT title in a way that Wardlow, bless his heart, hasn't. Not Wardlow's fault. I think that's genuinely been the booking.
Kaz?
I'm going to go Ricky Starks, man. I think MJF is the easy answer because, you know, the era is about to begin and it still feels like I said in the beginning of the show, it feels like a clean slate. So when you have a clean slate, you have an opportunity for somebody to take that chance. And I think the story that they're telling with Ricky Starks being sort of like this scrappy, plucky underdog who is beating all of these people who are much bigger than him is pretty compelling. And I think it's going to make for a great storyline with him and MJF if that turns out to be where they go as his first world title defense. So I think this is the beginning of Ricky Starks' time as a main event level player in AEW.
Phil, who you got?
William Regal.
Yeah.
I want to see the promo that he does to explain himself. I want to see what the response of the remaining members of the Blackpool Combat Club is. I want to see where the next step of that, because I think that's a story that we're in the middle of, right? They have to do they have got to do two or three more beats of that whole thing, you know, to really turn both those guys fully heel if that's where they want to go. What does this mean about, you know, Moxley going forward, Danielson going forward, Claudio going forward? I guess Yuta going forward, is he still in this promotion? He was a guy that was pushed a lot. Now he's just, him and Garcia went from every show being about those two guys to defending the ROH Pure title against Lee Johnson. Well,
there was some question about what he was doing with wasting MJF's time too. By, you know, AEW logic, it wouldn't shock me to see him hanging out next to MJF in the coming weeks. We'll see. The Blackpool Combat Club, just in general, is a question, although my guess is it's going to be more of a whimper than a bang, the farewell of that thing. So that's not on my list. There's something, man, really, really evocative about Jungle Boy Jack Perry with that dried blood on his face. I'm excited to see more than anything with him, assuming he can move on from this. I know Christian's still final bossing out there somewhere, but like, what on earth does Tony Khan see as the next phase for Jack Perry? That is interesting to me. But to me, the person I'm most excited to see is Jamie Hayter, kind of for the same reason that Kat was talking about Ricky Starks. She won the title, interim title, though it is. This could be, there's no reason this can't be her big star-making moment. There's no reason why she can't come out and cut a promo and call out Thunder Rosa. I mean, the levels of possibility here are off the charts. Who knows if they'll actually go through with it, but I'm very, very excited to see what they do with this totally just like grassroots, homegrown, wildly over talent that has a title belt now. Overall, I thought it was a really good show. I think Kaz said it right at the start. This was a reboot that didn't feel overly done as a reboot. There were a lot of outcomes that felt sort of obvious going in, but the drama and the matches, I think, earned it. And
this is a show that they couldn't fuck up, and they didn't.
Yeah, almost like a season premiere.
They couldn't afford to fuck it up.
Yes. And they did it without missing a beat. And now we can look at Dynamite and Rampage in the next few weeks with fresh eyes. We got about, what, 4 months, 5 months until the next pay-per-view or something like that. I think they'll have Winter is Coming. And like, you know, those side shows like that replace Dynamite. But now it kind of feels like a very fresh start. Hopefully, you know, Mox gets to go away for a little bit, so when he returns, it feels like a big deal. You know what I mean? Like, I think there's a lot to tell there. So it was needed, and they did exactly what they needed to do to get back on the good foot.
I mean, I don't know, Kaz, isn't there a pay-per-view in 3 weeks?
Is there?
Yeah, this isn't Final Battle in 3 weeks?
Oh my gosh, we pretend
ROH is a separate thing, but it's not a separate thing. It's the same promotion. They only have the one television. So, I mean, in some ways, they've got a while to go, but also they have to like build. They're going to spend the next, that's the other weird thing.
I was going to mention that.
They're going to spend the next 3 weeks of TV building towards ROH Final Battle, right? We don't have anything like that yet.
One of the least compelling or most frustrating periods in AEW booking history was the build up to Forbidden Door, when they just sort of had to like figure out how to be two promotions at the same time. And so I am anxious about what the next few weeks are going to look like. Although maybe this is a good time to let some of your guys take some time off, focus on something different, and really kind of, you know, let Ring of Honor try to be a thing. We'll see. They're going to get TV apparently sooner rather than later. We got to get out of here. Before we do, Monday Night Raw is tonight. The only thing that they've announced is that Asuka and Rhea Ripley are having a one-on-one match for the War Games advantage. Phil, you got a prediction here?
I think Rhea Ripley is going to win.
Why is that?
Oh, I mean, I think that in the history of war games, and if you guys want to read an article about the history of war games, we've got two of them on the ringer.com, one from Game and one from me. I think the heels have the advantage about 97.4% of the time. And in the other 0.6%, it's always a thing where the baby faces have the advantage, but then somebody gets taken out backstage and the heels have the advantage anyway. So I'm thinking, if you guys are we FanDuel? Does FanDuel sponsor this? I would go ahead and put some money on Rhea Ripley if you guys were had a little extra, want to build up some cushion for your Christmas presents. I would say that's a pretty solid bet.
Yeah, I think that's probably pretty good too. All right, we got to get out of here. You guys, parting thoughts? Want to get your plugs in? Nick, you go first.
You can check me out at the Nickster. That's THENICKSTER. And I did, if we can, real quick, I wanted to shout out Mouse House Books, which has produced and published two of my friends who are the reason I'm here on this podcast right now. Their names are David Gibb and Mark Masick. Mark Masick wrote Kaboom and Kaboom 2. The first one's good. The second one's The Great American Novel. You should both check them out on MouseHouseBooks.com. And David Gibb wrote How to Ace Your Comeback, which is a short story about a disgraced wrestler who goes to a small town. And when he arrives at the show, it turns out there's a bounty on his head and he has to figure it out before the match happens. Both of those, check those out. Thank you. Happy Thanksgiving.
Phil?
I feel like a shitbird just doing my plugs now. Nick's plugging his friends. I'm not going to plug my friends. Fuck my friends. I've got a book available on Amazon, Wave the Blade 100 with the Greatest Bloody Matches in Wrestling History.
Excellent book.
I've got a thank you. I've got a column coming out at some probably when this is released of my three best matches of the week, where I talk, write a lot about MJF versus John Moxley and also Ricochet, Mustafa Ali, and Mayu Iwatani versus Kairi from the New Japan Stardom show, which is very, very good. And folks should go out of their way if they're not tired of watching wrestling after 4 hours of watching an AEW pay-per-view. They should go check that match out. That's really cool. And the story going into that match of those two women and their relationship is really interesting too. And I go into that a fair amount.
Kaz?
You catch me on Say Less with Kaz, OK, and Rosie, my podcast feed, and youtube.com/Kazim. You can catch me at MSG all week. I'll be doing the BetCast this weekend for the Knicks and the Grizzlies. And also, you can catch me on The Bump tomorrow, Wednesday, and I'll be on there with, I think, Mia Yim and the OC, which should be really fun. So check that out. And also, I think I'm on an upcoming episode of This Is Awesome dropping this week on greatest WWE debuts. I think it's going to come on right before Survivor Series or right after it. I'm not sure, but check it out. Those things are really fun. And you'll be seeing a lot more of us on this feed, right? So we'll be back Thursday. Is that what's happening?
Kaz and I are going to be back later this week for your for your Survivor Series War Games preview. We'll do a little quickie preview. And then next week, there's a whole new schedule on the Ringer Wrestling Show. Stay tuned. Watch this space. You can hear me here. You can hear me on the press box. You can hear me on the Book of Wrestling. Keep your eyes out. Keep your ears out. We're going to have some fun stuff going on. Thanks for listening. Bon voyage to Johnny Moxley. We'll see you back here next week, humanoids.